This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, January 11th, 2016. I'm Caleb Brown. When the Justice Department suspended so-called equitable sharing in their civil asset forfeiture program, they did so for all the wrong reasons. So says Adam Bates, a policy analyst at the Cato Institute. He explains why civil asset forfeiture needs to go entirely. It was about a year ago when Eric Holder, shortly before leaving the Attorney General post, issued a statement saying, we are no longer going to engage in adoptions, which is a specific procedure of civil asset forfeiture. And he left office. It turns out that that probably will affect very few forfeitures. Loretta Lynch becomes the new Attorney General. And when she was quizzed about asset forfeiture, she drew essentially no distinction between criminal asset forfeiture and civil asset forfeiture. She said it was a great tool, a wonderful tool. But now the DOJ has said they will be, in their words, deferring for the time being any equitable sharing payments from the federal civil asset forfeiture program. So what does that mean?
That means that for the time being, the DOJ is suspending, or they will not be giving the up to 80% returns on state and local law enforcement contributions to the federal equitable sharing fund.
State and local, or should say mostly local police agencies in essentially bring in the feds at some point to actually execute a seizure and then get a kickback of up to 80% of those funds, as you mentioned.
Right. As opposed to the adoptive seizures that you mentioned, the alternate route and the much more common route for the use of the equitable sharing program is through what are called joint task forces, which is cooperation between local law enforcement and the DEA or some federal law enforcement agency, and then going through that way through the joint task force route, which and of course the joint task force method of equitable sharing was untouched by the Holder reforms.
Now, this is from the statement issued by the Department of Justice. The department does not take this step lightly. We explored every conceivable option that would have enabled us to preserve some form of meaningful equitable sharing while continuing to operate the program and meet our other fiscal obligations. Unfortunately, the combined effect of two reductions totaling $1.2 billion in their DOJ's budget made that impossible. So it doesn't seem like this is a principled stand on the issue of asset forfeiture.
Right. The DOJ statement makes clear several times that they still believe, Attorney General Lynch and the Obama administration still believe that civil asset forfeiture is a wonderful tool for law enforcement, and they are not happy ostensibly about having to make this move. They're citing budget restraints and the actions of Congress, but they're very explicit that they fully intend for this program to make a return as soon as possible.
Our friends at the Institute for Justice, who've done a lot of legwork gathering data and publishing that data about asset forfeiture, said that this has been essentially an indefinite change. But from reading the release from DOJ, it makes it seem as if it's possible that the funds that have been seized and the money that DOJ has been keeping may eventually be dispersed to those same law enforcement agencies in states.
Right. The statement from the DOJ is very clear about that this is, in their view, a temporary step. And obviously, this is not – it hasn't been abolished by Congress. This is not a law. This is an internal determination by the Department of Justice to take this step, and they could reverse it, whether they reverse it after pressure from law enforcement or they reverse it after getting a bigger budget appropriation. But indefinite is appropriate, I think. It has no defined term, but yeah, this is not an abolition. This is not the end of the federal equitable sharing program.
There's clearly a recognition at DOJ, and we've talked about this before, that there is a public relations problem, and that public relations problem has been stoked in large part by folks here at the Cato Institute, by the Institute for Justice, by the Heritage Foundation, among others, that have said, look, this is wholly inappropriate. So at least they recognize that there's this terrible PR disaster that continues to unfold. But at least now, temporarily, there's an end to state and local agencies seizing for the explicit purpose of using this federal program.
Right. And it should be said, this is a good step. This is a good thing. It removes the incentive for state and local law enforcement to police for profit insofar as state and local law enforcement were using federal civil forfeiture laws to either get around more restrictive state laws or to do forfeitures in states that do not have civil forfeiture. So this is a good step and should reduce the perverse incentives that the federal forfeiture program provides. It's just not the end of the game.
We should note the reason that states would want to involve the federal government in any given seizure, which you alluded to, is that state governments either say, we don't do this sort of thing, like New Mexico recently abolished its civil asset forfeiture program, or all the money you guys seize, yeah, that goes into the general treasury fund, and then we'll decide how much of it you get. This equitable sharing allows local agencies to circumvent that almost entirely.
Right. And many jurisdictions, even that, as you mentioned, that even jurisdictions that have civil asset forfeiture, they don't all return the 80% that the federal equitable sharing program gives back to law enforcement. Some jurisdictions, it may be 50%. Some jurisdictions, all the money may go to the general revenue fund or the education fund. And the equitable sharing program was a way for law enforcement agencies to circumvent the rules that their own state governments had set up.
What has been the response from law enforcement?
It has been apoplectic, I believe, is the term. I should say that the rhetoric around civil asset forfeiture has been white hot for several months now. I know out in Oklahoma, where there's a forfeiture bill, that it was rebranded the Organized Crime Protection Act and said that it would allow ISIS to take over the state of Oklahoma. So the rhetoric from law enforcement and prosecutors has been super heated for some time now. But the response to this move has called this simply unconscionable that the federal government would stop participating in this program. Of course, the typical citations to terrorism, that this will make it impossible for law enforcement to protect against terrorists and to prosecute the drug war. It's the typical response when law enforcement funds come under threat. But at this point, those kind of references to terrorism and drug cartels, that's really the only justification left. Those are the only arguments left, because as you said, when you explain to people what civil forfeiture is, there's really not a lot of public support for this. There's increasingly little legislative support for this. It really is the police and prosecutors trying to protect a system that has generated billions of dollars over the years for law enforcement.
How much does this generate for law enforcement?
Well, at the federal level, it's estimated that that every year there are about $4.6 billion worth of deposits into the forfeiture, into the DOJ's forfeiture fund. How they're dispersed out, it's unclear how much on average, but usually somewhere around $650 to $700 million a year is returned to state and local law enforcement.
Adam Bates is a policy analyst at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to this and other podcasts at our website and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.